I first went to Nepal after high school on a volunteering trip and with Duke of Edinburgh, and I was very moved and inspired by the Nepali people that I met on that trip, and also very confronted by that type of poverty, because living in Australia, it's a different type of poverty that we see in Nepal. So on that trip, I was really inspired by the generosity of the people, and I was then asked back to lead groups of architects from Melbourne to Nepal. Mm. And when I led a group of architects over to Nepal, I stayed on afterwards. And a Nepali friend of mine said, "I know you're interested in social work. My sister's disabled and she's got six other women in a tin shed and they're not making enough money to cover their basic needs. Do you want to go and visit them and meet them and see if we can do anything?" So that's how Seven Women began. Yeah. I went with him and met the women and learnt about their stories of struggle and suffering because of their disabilities, and that really inspired me to then act.
And what year are we talking about? When was this, your first visit?
So the first visit was, I think, 2004, and then I went back a few times. Mm. And then when I met the women was in 2006, and that was my fifth trip to Nepal. I didn't have a big period of time when I was deciding what am I going to do. I met the women and I was inspired by the I remember asking these women who were operating out of a tin shed what they would do if they had enough money. And they all said that they would like to help women back in their own villages because they were in a worse position than they were in Kathmandu. And that's what really inspired me, because I thought, while these women are living in such basic conditions and they're already thinking of how they can help people in their remote village areas. So that made me feel like, imagine if I could just help a little bit, that would really lift these women to be able to help others in future and create a ripple effect.
And empowering is obviously one of the best solutions, to provide, people's. But when we're talking about disabilities, what are we talking about?
So Sangeeta, for example, she had fallen out of a tree when she was younger and hadn't had the enough money, or it was very far away from the closest medical facility. And by the time she got there, they actually thought it was her elbow instead of her shoulder that had popped out of place. So they put the plaster on the wrong part of her body, and as a result, she has a left arm that now can't work. Mm. The other women had different disabilities, so Sundia's bones haven't formed properly because of lack of nutrition at birth. So to look at these women were obviously physically disabled, and when I heard their stories, I realised that they can't change this fact, and it was because of this reason that they were finding it so hard to sell their soaps and candles that they were making at the time.
And so you decided to help, apparently, with your last $200. Is that right?
Yes. I was coming to the very end of my trip, and I worked very hard to come to Nepal and save money, and I had a little bit left, and I thought, I wonder if we can make a difference with such a small amount of money, and I wonder how we should spend that money to be able to give the women a bit of a head start. And I'd had you mentioned empowerment before, and I think that's a really important point to make, because I'd been to Nepal five times, and in those five trips I was really interested in seeing how other organisations make a difference. And I noticed that the ones that were providing welfare to people and just giving them free things were really not supporting people for the long term, and it was creating dependency. So the people were disadvantaged, but they were actually relying on that welfare, and they could never leave or start their own business. So by the time I met the women, I had that experience, and I understood that by building people's skills, you actually allow them to be free and to build the skills to then leave and start their own business or do what they want with those skills.
So now, a few years on, the organisation, the Seven Women Project, has grown in strength, I guess. How many people are involved with it now?
So we've got a team of about 50 volunteers here in Australia that do a lot of the work. The women make products over in Nepal, and the volunteers do the picking and packing and sending out the orders to shops here. We sell to about 120 shops around Australia wholesale. So that's what provides the money for our organisation to be sustainable here and fund the programs over in Nepal. So we've got a pretty big team of volunteers, and they're such a fantastic help. And in Nepal, we've managed to train and employ and with our outreach programs, impact the lives of over 5,000 women. So it's grown quite quickly, especially in the last few years.
The first seven women, how much change have they seen in their lives?
So I might answer that question with an example of one of the women, Sandhya, who is very inspiring for me also, and all of the other women. Sandhya came, so I met Sandhya when Seven Women first began, and she was very timid and shy, and Sandhya's bones haven't formed properly. And so to look at, she looks quite different, and she was very stigmatized and feeling very unconfident when we first met her, and wasn't participating in the training because she felt like she wasn't capable of doing that. And then finally we did the training, and Sandhya started to gain confidence, but because her bones haven't formed properly, it was hurting her to be able to have to knit every day with her hands. So over that period of time, Sandhya also thought she's not passionate about knitting. She's passionate about teaching women. And Sandhya had an education, I think, up until class 8 or 9, and wanted to teach herself how to read and write, and also how to teach the other women to do that. So we really encouraged Sandhya to be able to do that. And now, 10 years later, she's our literacy teacher at the centre, and she's trained hundreds of women how to read and write. And now we're getting women from our remote village areas. We work in 4 villages, and the teachers come to Kathmandu to get trained by Sandhya, and then they go back to their villages and teach hundreds of women back in the villages how to read and write. So Sandhya is a very inspiring example of a woman who's completely transformed over time. It was interesting because we had a documentary screening a week and a half ago, and Sandhya is in the documentary, and a woman came up to me afterwards and said, I'd just like to give you my card, and if Sandhya wants an operation on her mouth, her jaw, then I'm willing to help fundraise money for that. And it was so strange because it's never even occurred to me that we would ever do that or offer that, or that Sandhya would ever want that, because actually, and I said to this woman, thank you so much for wanting to help, but Sandhya is very happy now. You know, she's very confident, and she's very confident in herself and the way that she looks. So I don't think, you know, don't think that's necessary now. So Sandhya is also the bookkeeper at the centre and in high management position at our headquarters in Kathmandu, and she's an inspiration to many other women, and many other women have the similar stories to Sandhya in terms of building confidence and now earning a great income and passionate and passing on those skills to other women.
When you started out, you were 22. How has your life changed?
My involvement in Nepal and creating Seven Women, it's been a very rewarding journey, but very challenging journey at the same time. And it's enriched my life a lot to be able to spend so much time in Nepal. And when I first went to Nepal, it did change my life because I was very inspired by the people and that family way of living in Nepal. It's quite different from living in the Western countries, very, you know, family oriented, and I think there's probably more loneliness in Western countries than in Nepal because everybody knows everybody and has a close family circle. But I couldn't help but also be confronted at, you know, for a society that I was so inspired by and people that were so warm and generous towards me, learning about these stories and the discrimination about women was really confronting because it was such a paradox and a contrast to what I was experiencing myself. So that also changed my life, that injustice that I saw, and knowing and experiencing, you know, how these women are treated because of reasons that they can't control, really urged me into action, and I wanted to do whatever I could to be able to, you know, try and flip that belief, or just to help the women to help the women become independent and out of those situations of suffering. So that that changed my life, and it's obviously been a big commitment for me, because it's been 10 years now that I've been doing this, and I've really been working full time on Seven Women every day. Mm. So, but also, I have such a fantastic team behind me, and I wouldn't be able to achieve any of this without that team. We've got a fantastic team in Nepal. They've really inspired me, and also great support here in Australia. Lots and lots of people wanting to support in any way they can to see the Seven Women vision grow.
You essentially run a social organization pretty much to support those women, but it's business-oriented side to it as well, where you sell products. So how do you manage essentially when there's a business, you've got to address the business needs. So if there's, you know, the profits going down, so there's, you know, aspects of cutting down on employees, and how do you balance that?
So we operate as a business, and we're registered as a charity though in Nepal and in Australia, but our model is a business model, and we chose to go down that path because that is more, in my mind, matching with empowering people rather than a charity that gives welfare. So your question was about how do you kind of grow a successful business when you're having to make business decisions and maybe cut staff here and there if we need to.
Yep.
We've been really lucky because we've grown very slowly, especially in the beginning. And, you know, businesses can, because most businesses would probably, for example, we can get responsible businesses that are fair trade businesses, and they buy products that are already being made. So it's just, you know, the purchase, and then they support fair trade, and they make sure that everybody that's being employed by that company is being treated and paid fairly. We actually created the manufacturing and production and trained the staff, so that took a long time to get the quality right, to be up to scratch, to be able to actually sell the products. But also the women, the staff that work with us are at times experiencing really big things in their life, so their concentration might not 100% be there, or some women are more disabled than others and they might take longer to be able to learn how to make the products. So to answer your question, it's taken us a lot longer to probably achieve what a business could achieve faster if they were just buying from an already set up factory and the quality and the staff were already trained. But that's kind of our first priority, and that's why we exist. It's not the profits is not our main goal and aim. So we've been able to be really in touch and in tune with the women that we're working with and take it slowly and make sure that they have what they need. Some women learn to make the products in a month. Some women need 3 months. Some women need a year before they can produce the products to a high quality. And that's something that we, you know, there's a lot of training organisations in Nepal that provide 1 month or 3 month training, and the women, you know, only about 10% of the women actually know how to make the products properly by the end of the training.